never knock. Every job I have, I used to keep you at the dock. Now they are up, I do that in a one. Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters. This is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Antonio Cano, who is the U.S. Bureau Chief for El País, where he is also Deputy Editor-in-Chief and was head of the newspaper's investigative division. El País is Spain's largest newspaper and the world's largest Spanish newspaper. Welcome to Background Briefing, Antonio Cano.
Hello, how are you?
Very well, thanks. Now, the elections, of course, are quite an upset for the ruling socialists, with the conservatives getting a resounding victory. The head of the Conservative Party is saying that 46 million Spaniards are going to wage a battle against the crisis, meaning the Eurozone crisis, and the work that lies ahead of us will not be easy. But he promises that Spain will end up at the head of Europe. So do you share that optimism?
You know, there is a big contradiction in these elections. This is a victory of historic proportion for the conservative, and also his main victory in history. But at the same time, this is a victory that led the prime minister a very close margin to act. Because, I mean, the main decision doesn't come from Madrid anyway anymore. I mean, he has to pact everything with Brussels and with the European Union. So, really, his margin to act is extremely close. So, let's see what will happen.
There's talk, of course, of austerity and more austerity. And I'm just wondering how you could have any more austerity given what has happened even with the last government of Zapateros, the socialists. They, of course, were blamed for reacting too late to the property market implosion, but they did cut public sector wages by an average 5%. They froze pensions and they raised the retirement age from 65 to 67. What more austerity can the Spanish people endure?
The big debate in Spain, actually. Rajoy has promised more austerity, really. He said that he has a mandate for austerity, and his first measures aren't going to be about austerity. He has promised a reform of the labor market and still more reform with pensions. Maybe rising the age of retirement two or three more years. But he also said that things are going to be better after being worse. So he means that probably I'm going to have still one more year of austerity, and then we'll begin another period of, let's say, of less austerity at least. But nobody can predict so far. I mean, we're talking about things are changing in Europe in days, not in years. So it's necessary to wait to see what's going on in France, what's going on in Germany before predicting what's going on in Spain. You know, this election is in Spain is in the middle of what German Chancellor Angela Merkel described as the world crisis in Europe after World War II. So it's everything in the hands of Merkel, everything in the hands of France and Germany, and we in Spain the only thing we can do is to wait. Why did they say, to tell you the truth? That's the reality in Europe right now. There is no more national sovereignty of, at least there is very few national sovereign state in Europe at the present moment. So it's necessary to wait what the European Central Bank decide, what the German Chancellor decide before any national government
again. I'm speaking with Antonio Cano, who is U.S. Bureau Chief of El País. He's also the Deputy Editor-in-Chief and of El País and was the head of the newspaper's investigative division. The idea of waiting for the Eurozone heads, the powerful German and French banks in effect, to get their act together, isn't that a part of the problem, is that the markets move fast and the politicians move slow, and this thing keeps going on, and it gets worse as the longer the politicians delay it, the worse it gets, and they still don't seem to have their hands around it.
Yeah, I understand that. Actually, people in the city are not waiting. I mean, people are already protesting in Greece, in Portugal, in Italy, and also in Spain. And we can expect much more protests in Spain if the new government opts for more austerity measures. What's the alternative? There is no other way in Europe if you want to stay in the Eurozone. So the question you have to ask if you are a Spaniard or if you are a member of the European community right now, if you want to stay in the Eurozone, if you want to be part of that club, you have to accept very tough rules in this moment. If you don't want to accept the rules, okay, you can go your way, but your way is also very difficult. It's a difficult way. It's not easy way out of the euro, I can tell you.
Well, but if you're one of the 45 out of 100 young Spaniards are out of work. And So what do you say to those young Spaniards? Do you say, well, just wait until the heads of the Eurozone and the European Central Bank and Merkel and Sarkozy and the bankers get their act together and then we'll have some austerity, but maybe in a year or so you'll have a job? Boy, I wouldn't want to have to sell that as a political program.
Mm-hmm. No, I mean, I don't want to be in the shoes of the new prime minister in Spain right now and tell my people that they have to wait. I mean, it's not an easy job, really. But I really don't know what else can he say. In Spain, we have a very good social net. I mean, a big part of these people without job, they still have social security, they still have health care and free education. That make their life a little bit easier, but still, that's not the solution. I mean, young people need to see a future, and I mean, they need hope, and there is no hope in Europe right now. That's the truth. There is no hope in the short term. We will have to suffer a little bit more before we get a light, because this is a difficult time in Europe, and we have to accept that.
So when the young people who have camped out call themselves the indignant ones, explain that sense of indignation, that emotional despair. How pervasive is it amongst the young?
They feel that they are not part of the wealthy state anymore. They feel a part of the state. It's something similar that the Occupy Wall Street movement here in America, the Spanish movement, started before Occupy Wall Street. We are speaking about the last May when the first demonstration started in the street. And it's the same feeling. They think that the politics don't work for the people anymore, that they obey the markets instead of fight the markets, and that they are part of a system. I mean, the politician class are part of the same class that the bankers and the people with the money and the richer of the society, and they have forget the common guys, the common people. And that's the feeling. That's the truth. And it's very difficult to govern a country with that feeling. It's almost the same situation in every European country right now.
So if you go back, I'm just trying to get a sense of where, you know, the Spain is in this current situation that Ireland was already in, and so was Portugal and Greece and now Italy and now Spain. So there's a kind of a domino effect here. But going back to the cause of the economic decline, how much did it relate to the Wall Street collapse in 2008, or how much was it a part? Spain had its own subprime bubble. There was an enormous amount of big housing bubble, tremendous amount of construction that was going on. Explain to us how the country got into the mess in the first place.
the crisis is related in part and is different in other parts. The Irish had their own problem with the banks. They have the big bank problem. Greece had the big problem with their own administration, their own budget. And Portugal and Italy are different cases. In the case of Spain, I would say that the housing bubble is the main factor. The housing bubble create a false reality of prosperity, which was not real. That made every people spend money in the same circle of cheap money and people spending more than they have, and Everything start with the housing bubble. It's true that no government could stop that cycle. I mean, the socialist government should know what's going on, and the truth is that they did anything to stop it. So now we are in this crisis. The final stage of the crisis is the same for all European countries, which is the debt crisis. But let's say that any country start in a different station. And we in Spain start clearly in the housing bubble, which was the worst in Europe. During several years, in the last 2 or 3 years, more houses were built in Spain than in France and Germany together. So that's crazy. That's stupid. And this crisis is the result of that stupidity.
Well, apparently, though, you were saying that socialist government in Spain wasn't watching the ball, but neither apparently were the German and the French banks, who lent a lot of the money and are now demanding bailouts.
Yeah, everybody took advantage of that, of the bubble, of that situation. Everybody is responsible, the banks and the people who spend the money. So with the illusion to have a house that they couldn't pay. But yeah, it's true that now the main consequences go for the poor people. That's true, that they are losing their house and they are still with the debt with the banks. And that's something that the government should act about. Because it's true that the poor people, that the people who had the confidence in the system, spend their money in their houses, they are the more are suffering the consequences of the crisis.
Well, Antonio Cano, that is exactly what happened here in the United States. I mean, the subprime housing bubble here was largely because aspiring working people in this country, a lot of minority families thought that this was their ticket.
Also in Spain, the immigrants. And the poor people was part of the bubble, yeah, really. It's very similar to what happened in America, that's true.
So in terms of the division, though, that's taken place in Europe over this crisis, where there's become a north-south cultural division, and as you know, Antonio Cano, the German people are angry at the idea that they, the German taxpayers, mm-hmm. have to bail out the southern countries like Spain, Italy, and in particular Greece. And mm-hmm. this has led to a kind of cultural divide. Is that...
Yeah, that's it. I found that a really dangerous sign in Europe. If you ask me what the worst that I found in this crisis, I would say that artificial division is the worst sign of this crisis. This division between the worker, the hard worker people in the north and the lazy people in the south, that is not true, and it's extremely dangerous because that is something that makes people feel angry about the neighbor, and we should part of the same community. We had the illusion to be the United States of Europe someday, but people is not in that feeling anymore. People now are resenting with the neighbor, resenting with the other country that are pushing me too hard. And people doesn't feel that romanticism about the euro that we have five, 10 years ago. And so everybody here should think twice. All of us made mistakes. I mean, we made mistakes spending more than we had. They had mistake lending more than they should. And start again thinking about the viable, possible Europe, maybe with more modest targets, and to rethink Europe and start again building a community.
So just in closing, Antonio Cano, the results of the election in Spain, this is a conservative government. I don't think you can call it a right-wing government. But the far-left parties did pick up seats. They went from 2 seats to 11 seats. Mm-hmm. So is this in any way an indication that European politics are going to move to the extremes, to the extreme right and the extreme left?
Well, you know, Spain is a polarized country in political terms. This election, I would say, led an even more polarized country. I wouldn't say between left and right, but more between nationalist and Spanish parties. The second main message of this election, other than the European crisis, is the rise of independent parties in the Basque Country and Catalonia. Especially in the Basque Country, let me remember, but I can tell you that 12 of the 18 seats in the parliament representing the Basque Country have been now won by the independents, but two different independent parties. That means that maybe between 60 or 70% of the population in the Basque Country vote for the independence indirectly, but at least for parties supporting the independence. That's going to be a huge problem, a huge risk for the new government in the coming months and years.
But in the overall European context, there's a concern that as economic conditions get worse, if in fact there is an economic collapse, and of course it will undoubtedly affect President Obama's re-elections over here, not to mention our economy in general, there's this feeling that Europe is ripe for a return to right-wing fascism in the sense of there's the fuel of anti-immigrant feelings, anti-Islam.
That's a phenomenon that we are already seeing in the Nordic countries, also in France, also in Germany, even in Italy. So we're going to see a more polarized Europe, a more dangerous Europe, really, with really bad feelings between people and the rising of the extreme right, and in some forms of extreme left also.
Well, I hope it doesn't come to pass, but I thank you for joining us here today, Antonio Cano.
Okay, anytime.
Again, I've been speaking with Antonio Cano, who is the U.S. Bureau Chief for El País, where he is also Deputy Editor-in-Chief and was the head of the paper's investigative division. El País is Spain's largest newspaper and the world's largest Spanish newspaper. We're going to take a brief station break and we'll be back talking about the renewed violence in Egypt.
Said that it would never